Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Zillennial Canon. I'm Kira.
And I'm crazy, stupid, happy to be covering a rom-com. Again, it's been a long time coming, Kira. And by a long time coming, I mean, how many weeks has it been? When's the last time we covered a rom-com?
A rom-com?
Yeah.
Was it How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Perhaps. I'm gonna fact check us right now, because I got to look at the Letterboxd list that I have. Which,
while
by the way,
you're checking that,
almost what? 150 movies.
Ooh.
Yeah.
While you're checking that, let me just say, speaking of rom-coms, breaking news, breaking fucking news, there was a Vanity Fair profile on Aubrey Plaza. I think it was Vanity Fair. And she revealed that she wrote a screenplay and she wants to direct it. And she said that she wants to get her Gary Marshall shit on, if I'm quoting that correctly. Gary Marshall, the most Zillennial director we ever had, rest in peace. Princess Diaries, New Year's Eve, Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, Princess Diaries 2. We can't go wrong. Like, she's going to bring back, like, the Zillennial vibes that we need.
I mean, I would love that. I think she's extremely talented, and I think she can make a really good movie if she put her mind to it. Yeah. To go off our fact-checking, if we're not counting Yours, Mine, and Ours, which I would say is more family, but it definitely has shades of rom-com, and if we're not, I don't think we're going to count Bride Wars, because that's a girly movie, not really about the rom or the com.
It's about friends.
It's about friends. Then yes, technically the last traditional rom-com we did was How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I wouldn't call Old Dogs, a rom-com, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think Paul Blart is like a rom-com, but it's like between a guy and his passion to serve, protect, and eat pie.
The real love interest is the people.
See, that's it for Zillennial Canon this week. This is your pick, actually, kind of.
Yeah. So last week I said, like, I really want to cover something, like, really good. And I was trying to think of all, like, the comedies. Like, I wanted to watch, like, a really good, like, comedy. Just felt, like, in the mood for it. Something, like, maybe, like, comforting or something, like, genuinely very good. I gave you two different choices that both were, like, really good movies. And you very enthusiastically said that you've been waiting for this movie.
I wanted to... Well, okay, also, I will say, the other option you gave me, which I don't want to spoil it because I do feel like we'll do it someday, and I do like this
eventually. Yeah,
I do like this movie a lot. It's very, I'd say that movie is equally very formative to me. My only issue with said movie, not so much as the movie itself, but as watching it during a work week and covering it on the pod, is that this director is very well known for making movies that are a little bit too long.
Oh yeah,
and I was like, the idea of watching one of his movies after an hour off work, I was like,
I have off on the day that we record. That's like my weekend. So I usually just throw on the movie while I'm like doing laundry or whatever. But I get what you mean.
I will say it'll get easier for me to like start watching whatever the fuck again after like Succession and Barry End, because that just takes up my Sundays. Unless I, like, watch a movie before that, but then I'll just be, like, consuming media for, like, 5 hours straight, and that's just, like, that's not good for anybody. So after Suck and Barry and,
But guess what? Barry.
What?
After that, Gemstones comes back.
Yeah, but that's easy. You know, that's, like, 130-minute, like, episode a week. Like, this is...
But also, like, I have Sex in the City on the same night, so...
So now the tides are turning.
The girls are, Yeah.
Yeah. I still like the plan of one day doing Sex in the City, the movie, but having me watch... Because I want to watch it without... do you remember our plan? It was for me to watch it without having the context of anything.
Yes.
Just completely going raw to it, and I just want to, like, be like, okay, what? And actually, I think it'd be even funnier if I watched the second one.
Yes.
So I could just entirely be like, yo, what? What? Wait, what's happening? Okay, Samantha did who? What? That's the only name I know. I know Samantha, and that's it. And I, to be honest, I don't even know. Is Samantha Sarah Jessica Parker?
No, Carrie is.
Okay, this is already getting too convoluted for me. I don't know what to do. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I just want to watch it. And yeah. But enough Sex in the City talk. That's for another day. Yeah, Crazy Stupid Love. So I guess, out of the two options you gave me, I did technically choose it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those weird movies that I think it is very cuspy. I would say traditionally Zillennial, because I think we were both like getting older as this movie came out. Did you see it in theaters?
I did not. This is definitely a movie that I think it was a Redbox movie. Yeah, but I would definitely like Redbox movie non-derogatory. I definitely would watch it like every time it came on like TBS though.
Yeah, it's definitely a TBS movie because this was like I don't know when they Warner Brothers acquired TBS, but whenever that happened, it was just like anytime you turn on TBS, it was just like Warner Brothers comedies.
Literally, like yeah. TBS, very funny.
Like I cannot tell you how many times I've seen The Hangover censored on TBS, like just too many times to count.
I can't tell you how many times I haven't.
I remember seeing this movie like. Well, actually, okay, let me say, like, I do think it's Zillennial, but I think it's Zillennial, it's not, like, a very, like, well-known Zillennial movie. Like, I don't think a lot of people have, like, memories of this movie. I think it's a movie that kind of had to get, like, a little bit reclaimed and kind of, like, revitalized a little bit. Because it did okay at the box office. I don't really remember there being, like, a huge, like, wave of love for it when it came out. Mm-hmm. But it's a movie that people like just kind of found like a year or two or 3 years after it came out, and they were like, oh wait, that was like charming and like that was cute. Mm-hmm. And but I remember going to a screening of this movie because I remember like winning tickets for it through like a radio station or something. Like I remember I had to go like pick up the tickets from like wherever the fuck I like wanted from, like a newspaper or something. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I remember, like, just going, like, the Monday before it came out with a friend and, like, not really, like, I mean, I just remember being like, well, that's a big cast. But, like, I was like, God, it was 2011. Mm-hmm. So I was like, 13 when I saw this in theaters. And I don't know. It's just, like, it's a movie that I, like, really, really liked the first time I saw it, even though I was, like, entirely probably a little too young to like fully appreciate everything about it. But like the older that I got, it's just like one of those like rom-coms that like kind of stuck with me. Maybe it's because it's one of the first that I like willingly saw on my own. And I would like often like rewatch this movie. Like this is like, now that I'm thinking about it, it really is like comfort food for me, where like I've rewatched this movie countless times just because like I couldn't think of anything else I'd rather watch. Like I couldn't think of anything else that I like find as amusing, that's just as easy of a watch for me. You could credit that to Ryan Gosling, you could credit that to Emma Stone, you could credit to whoever you want, but it's one of those movies that I think is complete comfort food. And I think the dramatic beats work pretty well for the most part. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's one that has stuck with me, and I really do. I love this movie. I'll say it.
Yeah. Literally, my dumbass was like, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have such good chemistry. How is this the only time they've ever worked together?
You dumbass. Yeah. Well, because my main note about it was that, like, I can't believe this, like, Damien Chazelle saw this movie and was like,
true.
Bala Land. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, their chemistry is like it's really fucking good. It's pretty exceptional. I mean that first scene where they're, or not the first scene they're together, but like the scene where like it's raining and they're at his house, it's just like it's so good. It's so like it's that kind of chemistry where you can like you're getting flustered watching it. You're like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. Like everything he says. And by the way, Ryan Gosling, like he's eternal. you know, the discourse of him being too old for Ken, shut the fuck up. But that being said, this was like Ryan Gosling at his like peak. Like, he has never been more Ryan Gosling than in this movie. Like, he's so good in this movie. It's like, I think a case could be made that like you maybe could have like nominated him for this movie just off of charm and the way he swoons.
Well, he was up for a Golden Globe.
Yeah, that tracks. Yeah, he's good in this movie. I love him in this movie. It's just like his charm, his charisma, his like the way he just like delivers like the jokes. It's just so like lightning fast. I love it.
I need him in more comedic roles, like genuinely. And I was thinking about it, like, I can't wait to eventually cover The Notebook, which I genuinely think is a good movie, because I think that he is so talented that, like, it's, like, ridiculous. Like, I genuinely think he is, like, one of the best actors of our time.
He's an incredible actor. His performance, I think his best performance, in my opinion, at least, is like The Place Beyond the Pines. I think that movie,
that's a great movie.
It's a great movie, but his performance is like, I would even say that's one of Bradley Cooper's best performances too. They're both fantastic in that movie. But yeah, no, Ryan Gosling, I like this like little window of time, like 2010 to like 2013, 14 was just like, every time Ryan Gosling was in a movie, you were just like, oh, like shit.
Blue Valentine, damn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he
sad movie.
Very sad movie. Incredible performance. We love a good time jump. Heartbreaking. Probably the saddest final shot I've ever seen in a film. And I guess he really is like one of those guys. He really does a lot of like romantic, not necessarily a lot of rom-coms, but like he does a lot of like love stories in his career. Which, like, I mean, I get it, because he's very, like, attractive and charming and generally, like, you know, he's everything that a studio would want in a leading man. So, like, I understand it. But I guess, like, a reason why I really love him in this movie and just, like, the way the character is written is because he almost feels like, it breaks down the archetype of the character that he usually plays. And he does a really good job at like kind of self-satirizing himself in this, where it kind of like, it gives you the goods of it for like the first like 40-ish minutes, where it's just kind of like, yeah, it's what you come to expect. But like through his relationship with Emma Stone, it's like, you get to like, I don't know, he breaks down his barriers and he becomes just a very like wholesome individual. And I think that's like one of the really big, like, strong points of this movie. Like, not just his performance, but I think the character is, like, genuinely very well written. And his, and again, not just the chemistry between him and Emma Stone, but, like, both characters, like, every scene they're together, it's, like, super cute, it's well written, you care about both of them. The dirty dancing bit is so funny, it's so cute. Like, I think my favorite joke in the entire movie is the hard cut to the garage when she wants to use his massage chair. Just like great shit. Like, it's just so like, I don't know, just the kind of movie that you like watch and you giggle at and then you have a good time with.
I think that whole scene, like, I'm just like a sucker in movies for like, even if it's terrible, for like people just like laying in bed and like talking about like whatever. And I think that really just like ups the chemistry between them. I think that's adorable.
But I love when he's like, can you ask me something personal? And she's like, okay, but then can we bang? And he's like, yes. Like, it's like, it's so cute, man. Like, I just like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. That's like easily the best chunk of this movie. It's so nice.
Yeah.
I think a case could be made also. This is one of Steve Carell's better performances, I think. He's really good in this movie.
Very much like Dan in real life type beat.
Yeah. Shout out to Nick. But yeah, Steve Carell, he's really good in this. Like, there are there's some scenes where he, and you gotta remember also, this was like right after he left The Office.
Mm-hmm.
So like he was really trying to like kind of like navigate like what he could do as a performer. I think he's been talented his entire career, but he didn't really, I guess, have like a chance to do a lot of like work when you're kind of mm-hmm. tied to that NBC contract, I guess. Because I think he's great in 40-Year-Old Virgin. You know, he really is. But there's just something about this movie where it really feels like, okay, like the chains were off. He was able to like kind of, I mean, there's like a comfortability to it because he is like funny in this movie and he does kind of play like a dad. So it's like, you know, it's definitely familiar, but there is like a shade to it where, you know, when he's arguing or remorseful or whatever in this movie, there's like a genuine like kind of like power behind each scene that he has. And it's fucking sad at points. Like it's like truly just a guy who like truly feels like he's failed in life. And it's like, it's effective. I mean, it's not like groundbreaking or anything, but as far as like a dipping your toes into like dramatic work, I think it's really exceptional. And then it's very telling that just like what, 3 years later, you get an Oscar nom for Foxcatcher. Like,
oh, that movie is crazy. I forgot about that.
Great movie. Very good movie. That's kind of like a redemption for him and Channing Tatum a little bit.
Yeah, he kind of went in on the rom-coms because this came after Date Night, which was actually one of the first first PG-13 movies I saw in theaters, with the exception of Avatar.
Yeah, Date Night was like,
can't wait to cover that one day.
That's a funny movie because like this, that also falls into that same category of like movies he was trying to do like in the midst of or a little bit post The Office, because I think he left The Office in like around the time this came out, like 2011,
mm-hmm.
if not late 2010, like it was really around that window. So I think stuff like Date Night was him trying to be like, okay, like if I do this, could I like survive off this? Like,
mm-hmm.
will my career like still like be okay without The Office? Yeah. And I think like once he realized that he didn't like necessarily need The Office as much anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. I also like, I've heard that like he just had like a lot of like NBC was kind of pressuring him to leave, which is weird, which like to this day I do not understand, because that show completely torpedoes
after. Yeah, it was fucking awful.
There's like some good episodes here and there, but it's, and I think the finale is pretty good, but it's just everything in between. It's just, it's really like, especially after what's his name leaves. I've read his replacement, the actor, James Spader, because he's actually pretty good.
For some reason,
he's fucking funny in that show. But the thing is, they write him off way too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Andy, which I mean, I like Ed Helms, but he is not like, that is not the guy.
He's a side character.
Yeah, completely.
He just gives side character energy.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to promote a side character to the boss, like, how about the development of Dwight that you've been, like, developing for, like, literally the entire series of him trying to prove himself as a leader? Or Jim, the reluctant leader, you know?
Yeah.
But no, they went with Andy, and it's been admitted that the only reason they did that was because of the Hangover success, not because of, like, character. It's, sorry, not to go full Office talk, but it's just like, but it's also very synonymous with this movie. Like, this movie is, again, it's very post Office. Like, it's something that Carell really could have only done after he left. And I think it, you know, it pays off. And yeah, it's also nice to see like Julianne Moore and something like this too. Cause I don't know. I feel like she's so familiar with like just like purely dramatic work that it's good to see her in something like, I don't know, Somewhere in the Middle.
Yeah, I love her.
She's great.
This has such just like a strong cast.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those casts where like, it's a cast completely made to like, when you're at the like movie theater and you walk past it, you're like, oh wow. Like,
to be like, oh wow, they're in that with that person, with that person. I mean, come on, even Joey King is in this movie. Like,
yeah, fucking
let's go.
Joey King
and Jonah Bobo. Like, come on,
dude. When I found out Jonah Bobo is in this movie, I lost my shit. Yeah, I and I will say, like, I remember, like, my mom's big draw to this was, like, exactly that. Like, I because she didn't see it in theaters, but I remember as it was coming out on DVD, she was like, "We need to get that." She's like, "I want to watch that." And I was like, "Okay." And but yeah, like, because I remember she was like, "Is Kevin Bacon in it a lot?" Because I like Kevin Bacon, and I was like, "Eh." I was like, "Not a lot, but like enough, I guess." I'm
Yeah.
like, so like, and then I remember when, like, I watched it with my mom, she like loved it, and I was like, "Okay, this is like, this is a classic at this point."
Yeah.
So I will say, upon rewatch of this movie, and it's something I just rewatched it like last year, because Victoria had only seen like parts of it on TV, never like in full. So I still, upon rewatch on Letterboxd, I still rated it like a 4.5, simply because if a movie makes me happy and comforted, I will give it a high rating because it makes me happy, and you can never take that away from me.
Yeah.
That being said, there is a section of this movie with the babysitter that is, in very polite ways, not good. And I think it's for many reasons, and it's the thing where I was like, it's not even offensive, it's just like dumb.
It's like the kind of thing where if this movie was made like 1 year later, it would not fly.
Yeah.
I don't know
Well,
what specifically you're talking about, like what scene you're talking about, but I
all
think
of
the
it.
entire plot
All of, no,
line
that's what I'm saying,
with the
like all of it.
babysitter. Okay,
Yeah,
yeah.
that, like the entire section of the story. Like, I mean,
Yeah.
because when I was a kid, I get so weird saying that about this movie. But yeah, but like, I mean, yeah, I was 13 when this came out. So like, when I was a kid, I remember thinking the only weird thing about this movie was like the fact that she like gives the kid nudes at the end.
Yes.
But upon like watching it as an adult, like, I mean, when you get like 17, 18, you're watching it, you're like, "Oh, that's a little weird." But then like watching it like when you're 25, it's like, "Oh, yeah, this
Yeah.
entire thing." It's like, it's so bizarrely, like, it's so, 'cause I almost didn't, when it first starts, I almost admire it, because like the way she has like a crush on Steve Carell, and she doesn't really know how to say it, and she kind of sees it from afar, and she sees like Julianne Moore, who has like some really genuine drama in this, grappling with like the age and like the fact that she became a mom so early, and she's just like, she loves her kids and she loves her husband to an extent, but like, it's just like she's also trying to see where maybe she lost herself.
Yeah.
And whereas like this, I forgot the character's name, but the babysitter is like watching, and she's like, "How could you like not fully appreciate this guy that you have?" Like, that's an interesting angle. And
Yeah.
that first scene where they're in the car together, it like, it's so close. Like, that's a great setup, right?
Yeah.
But it's just like the way it brings in the kid, and the kid, like, the kid's not bad in this movie, I don't think. I think he's completely fine. It's just the writing for these characters is like so crazily amateur and weird to me. And it's so weird because the other half of this movie is fantastic. That's what's
Yeah.
like mind-boggling about it to me. Like, I do not understand how it's this, like, the varying degrees of quality of this movie are so preposterous to me. It's so like,
I
it
think
hurts my.
that the babysitter plot line could remain if they either chilled on the kid having a crush on her. Like, he could have a crush on her, but he was like straight up harassing her.
It completely takes over the plot, where the point where like the Steve Carell that all like completely gets lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or remove the nude pictures thing.
Awful. Awful.
Or have her like consider taking them and then get caught and accidentally say like, oh, like
Yeah.
the pictures should not exist.
This is an example of a screenplay that I think really could have learned how to exercise restraint And it went the extra mile when it really didn't have to. Whereas you'll find with like so many classic rom-coms, you'll find moments exactly what you're describing, where characters are on like the precipice of like about to do something really like crazy, and then they like don't. But the fact that they were willing to do that speaks more mm-hmm. volumes than them actually mm-hmm. pulling it off. And I, now granted, I will say it does lead way to the great moment with all of them at the party. Yes. But
we should still come back to that after we talk about all the plot lines.
All I was going to say is, even in spite of that, there still has to be another way to get to that point, I feel like. Because it's so clumsily put in, I feel like. And it really, you know that gif of, like, whoever, like, watching Euphoria on the iPad and, like, they're skipping the kid, like, singing?
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, me during all the babysitter scenes in this movie. I'm just, like, skipping. And honestly, in retrospect, I'm wondering if I find it such a comforting movie to me, because I probably did that as a teenager, and I just forgot about the fact that I did that. Scene selection is a bitch on DVD. Like, I totally forgot about that shit. And, like, I totally used that for this movie. I had no idea.
Yeah. But, like, or they should have made her, like, 20 or, like, 19 or something. And then, like, made it not even, like, a legal thing, but make it, like, Steve Carell being, like, no, like, why would I go for you? Like, I'm sorry. And then they could have a moment where it's, like... Yeah. I'm not even saying this from, like, a sensitivity standpoint. That's this from, like, I understand that the plotline is supposed to make you uncomfortable, but, like,
But is it, like, is it, like, is that their intent? Because if that was their intent,
definitely.
Why did it end on a sweet note of her giving a kid child nudes? Like, it's just,
exactly.
like...
Exactly, but I mean the,
So, it's so gross. Yeah. Like, and it's really a shitty feeling, like, when a movie you would otherwise consider to be, like, a favorite of yours has something like that in there. And again, it's like you said, it's not a sensitivity thing. It's not like I'm triggered by this movie. I'm not, like, offended by this movie. It's just, like, I think anyone could watch this movie and say that's easily the weakest link of the, like, whole movie. Yeah. Like, it's, like, even if you put, like, the morals and the questionable shit aside, like... It just doesn't work. Like, it actually, like, slows down the movie if you just want to be, like, objective about it. Like, it's not as funny. It's not as charming. It's not, you know... I mean, I think both, like, the babysitter and the kid are, like, fine in the movie. Mm-hmm. But neither of them are as, like, good as, you know, Emma Stone or Julianne Moore. Or, like, you know, like, none of them are on that caliber. So...
I mean, I think that the actor that played the babysitter, Leo Tipton, they were on America's Next Top Model, and they were in Warm Bodies.
Okay. But, I feel like I've seen them in something else, but I can't remember what. I might be imagining stuff. I've definitely seen them in stuff before, other than this movie. And every time I see them, I'm like, oh.
Golden Exits. Did you see that? The Alex Ross Perry movie?
No, I did not.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah.
I think the only Alex Ross Perry movie I've seen is Queen of Earth, which I loved. Mm-hmm. So
you didn't see Her Smell?
I did. I like that too. That was good.
Great one.
Great one.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a really good actor. I think they did, like, a really good job. Like, I don't know. I just think that, like, the body language of the babysitter was, like, meant to make you uncomfortable. Like, she had, like, a side ponytail, and she was, like, so, like, clumsy and, like...
Yeah.
I don't know. I think the whole character was supposed to be, like, uncomfortable, and I think that's, like, the point of the plot line.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, like, trying to make you feel, like, uncomfortable, but I just think, like... it went way too far down that rabbit hole, and then it entirely expects the audience to, like, find the outcome of it all to be sweet,
not horrifying.
It's just weird. Like, it's really strange.
Also, like, Stanford check. Babysitter's going to Stanford College, apparently.
Right. Yeah. I will say John Carroll Lynch check the Zodiac killer himself.
Marissa Tomei. What if the Zodiac killer, like, you know how they're like, oh, the Zodiac killer, like, is, like, nobody knows, like, who he is or if he's still, like, okay, this takes place in California. Like, technically, like...
Yeah.
The Zodiac killer could be alive and could be the dad of a babysitter who's involved with Steve Carell.
I mean, you could totally have this movie open the same way Zodiac opens, with like a 10-minute tracking shot of the Zodiac's car.
Yeah.
Going to a park. except some German and Macy's to buy a Steve Carell cologne. Yeah, I like seeing people like that in these movies, like guys that like are otherwise not in these kind of movies, but they're just playing like a side character, like another dad. Like, that's always funny to me. You mentioned before we started recording, Josh Groban is in this movie for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him because he has like a fuck ass haircut.
Yeah, I mean, he's very
ass haircut, actually.
Very ass haircut. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the whole cast. Kevin Bacon, obviously, very notable.
I'm love named him. After his wife.
What's that?
I'm named after his wife.
Oh, no Chris Sedgwick, yeah.
Yes, nice. Yes, I am.
Let's see. Marissa Tomei, we're always a fan of her. I mean, that's just truly a big cast.
In my brain, I thought that Molly Shannon was Marissa Tomei's character, because I haven't seen this in a few years. And that just seems like somebody that Molly Shannon would play.
In another universe, that's probably true. I also feel like Marissa Tomei never plays these kind of characters. So, but this is like a character that Molly Shannon would play.
Mm-hmm.
So that checks out. There's like a lot of like... Okay, so it makes sense to me that this movie is written by Dan Fogelman, who... This movie has like this movie very much, other than like relying on comedy and charm and romance, it really relies on like plot mechanics and like twisting and turning very like simple things, like withholding information that other characters know. Mm-hmm. That's a very classic screenwriting device, but it's really like when you like pick it up in certain movies and you see how it like carries over, especially over like one writer's like body of work, you can kind of like not unsee it. So especially with Crazy Stupid Love, this is kind of the first time this guy has like dipped into this. Mm-hmm. But it's funny to me that maybe the worst example of everything I just described is a little movie called Life Itself, also written by Dan Fogelman. And you know, I would even say, and this is a show that I like, but a show that completely is known for this. This is what this entire show's thematics and premise is based off of. And that is one, This Is Us on NBC. That show, for anyone that's watched it, till the very end, just like withholding information, characters know things that you don't know as an audience member. Yeah. And then they're like, you didn't know this? And it's like, to be continued. Like, it's just like, you know, you see, like, because before this, if you can believe it, he wrote zillennial classics such as Fred Claus, Tangled, and last but certainly not least, Cars. He wrote Cars. Can you believe that, dude? I cannot believe he wrote Cars.
That's the reason why I love this movie, obviously. Like, it just subconsciously. Yeah, I had said before we started recording, like, why is Dan Fogelman's name purple? Like, why have I clicked on his name on Wikipedia before? And then I clicked on it, immediately saw in his filmography Fred Claus, and that was purple. Like, I've clicked on it, and I was like, okay, that's why.
Yeah, he's a very zillennial presence, regardless of, you know, whatever you may think about him, he is very, very reliable in that space. So, you know, we do have to give him an honorary award one day. But that being said, I think this movie is really, I'm glad that this is him at the beginning of his career, because it does feel like, even though he does maybe sprinkle in one too many like gotcha moments for the audience, I still think it's restrained enough to where it's not annoying. And I think it's even dare I say, effective at points. Like,
yeah.
Because I remember, like, sitting in the theater for this and finding out that, like, Emma Stone is Steve Carell's daughter and genuinely being like, I had that moment in the theater. Now, maybe you could trace that to me being a stupid 13-year-old. Probably. But I can't deny, like, my first memory of this movie will always go back to the fact that I was genuinely surprised by every reveal in the movie. And it worked for me. So I'm very curious to see, like, someone watch this for the first time, like, in the year 2023.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, an adult. And, like, how they would react to it. Like, would they just, like, pick up on all the, like, shit? Because I think it's pretty well hidden in this
movie. I think it is, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I like the idea that, like, her name's Hannah, but they call her Nana because the little sister couldn't, like, pronounce, like, names.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a really, like, clever way. And that's, like, seems, like, realistic. Like, that is something, like, a family would continue to call
mm-hmm.
their daughter. Like, that's, like, yeah, like, from a screenwriting perspective, I'm like, yeah, that's, like, the tracks. That makes sense to me. And then they also, like, have the, they make the point that Steve Carell never told Ryan Gosling about the fact that he had an older daughter because Ryan Gosling, on the very first night they met, he said to not talk about his kids.
Yeah.
Which, like, so, yeah, like, it all, like, it just makes sense. And so, like, it really does kind of pave a perfect kind of, like, gotcha moment. I even think that Marissa Tomei moment, you know, pays off pretty well. It's pretty funny. I can't remember if I'm forgetting any other, like, kind of gotcha, but...
I thought that Marissa Tomei would be the babysitter's teacher, but I think it works, obviously, a million times better that she's the son's teacher and they're forced into a parent-teacher conference with her.
Yeah.
It's very good, like, very good payoff when it's, like, Julianne Moore and Steve Carell are, like, almost, like, getting along again, and then they get called into the parent-teacher conference and it's Marissa Tomei. That's a good one.
Yeah, this movie does kind of slut-shame Steve Carell a little bit.
A little bit.
Which, like, I mean, valid to an extent, but, like, yeah, it's just funny. Because, like, it's funny, because, like, you could... If this movie had, like, the reverse, like, Julianne Moore was, like, going out, mm-hmm. and then they try to, like, slut-shame her, it would be like, ooh. But, like, you see Steve Carell getting slut-shamed, and you're like, good. You fucking slut. Like, yeah. Well, like,
to be fair, him picking up women only works once, and then it turns out to be a disaster, to be fair.
Well, actually, I mean, no, because he meets Marissa Tomei.
Yes.
And that goes bad until it goes good. Because I think that scene's really funny, the way she's, like, she gets turned on by him, like, being completely honest with her.
Yeah.
Like, a very funny scene. But then, you know, that whole montage, I forgot how many he tells Julianne Moore that he, how many women he slept with. I think he, 9, I think she says.
Mm.
Is he, like, whispers at night? Yeah, yeah, she go, yeah. Like, he goes, like, 9?
Yeah. I forgot about that.
But yeah, so, like, there's, like, a little bit of a montage, and, like, and then I forgot, like, how, it's not even, like, that, in that moment, like, Julianne Moore is, like, not even hurt that, like, he's, like, slept around. It's, like, the fact that, like, he would use, like, her, like, the same pickup line that he used on her.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's what, like, really gets her. Which, again, like, there's so many moments where this movie's always, like, teetering on the edge of, like, shit that I hate in movies. But it, like, goes for something a little more sincere, so it actually does pay off. And I think a lot of it is also in credit just to the fact that Julianne Moore can make anything work in a movie. You know, she's just that good of an actress.
Yeah.
So, like, even, and, like her and Steve Carell, like, you can have something as goofy as, like, Steve Carell, like, standing in the rain, like, in a middle school parking lot, and, it, like, it will work because he's a good performer, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think it balances that stuff pretty well, because if this movie was just straight up Ryan Gosling teaching Steve Carell how to, like, land with women, it would not really, like, I mean, it's really fun for, like, the first 20 minutes, But I think the movie wisely quickly moves past that.
Yeah.
Immediately.
The different storylines definitely, like, make it so much more bearable and good.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that first bit with, like, Steve Carell, like, in him at the mall is, like,
mm-hmm.
real. Like, one of the funniest things in this movie is the Velcro, like, wallet
mm-hmm.
bit, I think, is, like, so funny.
The shot of him just, like, he's, like, you can't, like, looking down on it with his sunglasses.
Oh,
on.
Yeah. So Tumblr. That was such a Tumblr gif.
That
yeah.
was on Tumblr. So yeah. much of this movie was on Tumblr.
Yeah. Yeah. That scene is, like, iconic. I, like that part, Be Better Than the Gap. I love when he, like, takes off his shoes and, like, throws them mm-hmm. off the balcony. Again, a lot of this just works because Ryan Gosling is so committed to, like, I mean, one, just being a good actor and just, yeah. like, selling anything he does. But it's just, like, genuinely funny. And, like, it doesn't seem like the movie's trying to, like, condone all this. It's just kind of, like, being, like, it fully gets into the ridiculousness of it all
yeah.
pretty quickly. And I think it's very wise for the movie to, like, at first show that, like, you know, Ryan Gosling subtly teaches, you know, Steve Carell's character, like, how to pick up women.
Mm-hmm.
And then the very first time Steve Carell tries to do it, he just completely, like, he only by, like, a miracle does he make it work. Like, nothing he learned works. Like, nothing he tries to accomplish, you know, goes through to fruition. And it leads to, even though he, like, you know, he gets to sleep with, like, several women, it completely blows up in his face. So yeah. you kind of get your cake and eat it too, because I think a lot of movies, like, with those kind of, like, problematic elements, they have very fun moments. So you get the fun moments of that, of, like, Ryan Gosling being a womanizer and Steve Carell doing his thing. But then the movie is, like, self-critical, you know, kind of the genre and the tropes and all those things. And I think that just makes it very well-rounded in the long run. And I think that's what makes this movie, like, ultimately work when it,
yeah,
what could fall apart.
This is also the era of feminist Ryan Gosling. Hey Girl. you remember yeah. that? Hey Girl.
How could I forget? Yeah.
I have that book, and I'm, like, scared to get rid of it because, like, mm-hmm. I've said this before, but it's, like, you know, when people, like, get rid of, like, Ouija boards and, like, their house burns down or something. I feel like it's going to happen with my feminist Ryan Gosling book. It's like a curse in my bedroom. That's
yeah,
like feminist... one of the first things. Okay, this sums up the timeline. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the first things I ever ordered on Amazon, along with, like, knee-high socks. And I think, like, some, like, an Arctic Monkeys t-shirt or something.
Right.
Like, that's what I ordered in one Amazon order. The first order I ever made on my own Amazon account.
That checks out.
Yeah.
That checks out completely. I don't remember what my first Amazon order was. Probably, like, a Funko Pop or some bullshit. But, like...
Yeah, probably.
I do remember feminist Ryan Gosling. That definitely is a throwback.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not the Hey Girl memes.
Hey Girl.
That definitely... That's a throwback. Like Facebook-ass memes. Yeah, this is kind of like full circle in that sense. I guess this really is when it started, huh? Like with this, so to speak. Because I can't think of, like... Cause it's not like Drive started it or anything. I can't think of another rom-com he was in around this time.
Really quick, I have the order up right now.
Mm-hmm.
2014. A pair of black thigh-high socks, thigh-high / knee-high, white, feminist Ryan Gosling book, California state flag, and that MacBook decal that looks like the Giving Tree, like, handing the apple, like, where you, like, stick it on your MacBook, that was all over Tumblr, and Cards Against Humanity.
That's very 2014 pill.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm looking at pictures of feminist Ryan Gosling right now. It's It's honestly pretty funny. That picture of him with the fucking glasses, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Like, which is him, like, he's like wearing a tank top and he has like the goofiest glasses on. He's just staring directly in the lens. It's such a funny picture. Yeah, I think his career is like really fascinating. The way he's like, he could be like in a Best Picture winner, or he could be in like, I don't know. Like,
I think he's in a Best Picture winner this summer, Barbie.
We can only hope.
It's gonna sweep the Oscars. I'm saying it right now. Dua Lipa, Best Original Song.
Did it come out yet? I didn't listen to it. Tomorrow.
I don't know when it comes out.
I'm really excited for it. I can't wait. I having known nothing about Barbie my entire life, but loving Greta Gerwig.
She's a doll.
Oh really? I didn't know that. Yeah, I'm like looking at his filmography right now. It's like, so 2010. I'm just gonna go over the heavy hitters. I'm not gonna do like everything, but 2010, Blue Valentine. 2011, he did this, Drive, and The Ides of March, which is kind of crazy. Jeez. For one year. 2013, he had Place Beyond the Pines, Gangster Squad, which wasn't good. Only God Forgives, which I liked, but people didn't love. I forgot that in 2014 he did a directorial debut of Lost River. Did you ever see that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
It's not great, but there is like his direction's not the issue with that movie. It's it definitely is a movie where like a very talented actor got a budget and he fully experimented, and I totally respect him for doing that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it completely works as the movie, but for a directorial effort, it's very cool to watch. Oh god, yeah, he was really good in The Big Short. Like that 2015 to like 2017 or even 2018 lineup, like he did Big Short, which he was great in, The Nice Guys, which he's fantastic in.
Yeah.
La La Land, Blade Runner 2049, and then First Man, like all back to back to back. And I believe after that he had a break because he had a kid, I believe.
I think so.
He definitely does have a kid. I think that's why he stopped doing stuff for a while, because there's a big like 5 year gap in between that. And then, because I know Eva Mendes, like his wife, she completely quit the industry after she became a mom, if I'm not mistaken. Like, I think her last movie was Place Beyond the Pines, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm.
I might be wrong about that, but it's definitely like one of her last movies. Which, like, that's a great couple. Great, like, yeah. Hollywood couple.
Did you see the picture of her in the Ryan Gosling shirt?
I did see that. Super yucky, right?
No, she just has a t-shirt with Ryan Gosling as Ken on it.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a Super Yaki shirt. No, her last Hollywood movie is actually Lost River. I didn't realize she was in that.
Mm.
Which, that's nice. Good for her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So I guess we jumped around to avoid that that entire like brawl at the end.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But that
we covered all the plot lines, right?
I mean, I guess we didn't fully talk about Kevin Bacon, but that's not like a huge thing. I like him in this movie. It's a very minor role, especially in retrospect. He's only like in a few scenes. I think the Julianne Moore stuff is pretty well developed, you know, especially in an ensemble. It's about as good as you can get. I think the movie very much could have been against her as a character, and I don't think the movie ever really villainizes her. I think it holds her like accountable for her actions at times, but like it never like it kind of shows like how like, yeah, even though it didn't come from a place of like intent, you were like still hurtful, you know.
Yeah.
And but it also never like, I don't know, it never villainizes her, where I feel like with another director, and if it came out like a year or two prior, it would have completely like made her the worst, like despicable character. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, is there anything else? I feel like that's it. I mean, it's I think everything works in this movie other than the babysitter stuff. Like it's all there except that. Like it's yeah. so close to being a perfect rom-com.
Yeah. So the brawl at the end, an iconic scene in 2010s cinema history.
Yeah. Yeah, it's even just from like a comedic writing standpoint, like the way that scene just like plays out, like it truly just feels like the scene will never end in like the best kind of way, because like all the revelations that are building up throughout the entire movie just like completely come out of that scene. Mm-hmm. And it literally never stops. Like it just keeps going and going and going, and it just like finally like crescendos to like just them beating the shit out of each other. And it's just like it's funny. Like it's very funny. I think the funniest part of the whole scene is when Kevin Bacon just shows up.
Yes. Yeah. And they all realize who he is and how he's the cause of like all of this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. Yeah. It's really good. Oh, like my favorite part of that is when he's like, "Hey, I'm David Lundhagen," and then Ryan Gosling goes like, "David Lundhagen," and he takes off his ring. He's like, "Okay," and he just like punches him in the face. It's so funny. Like I really love it. And then like the hard cut from like them like just like tussling on the ground to them like bleeding in front of the cops, like, is again, like, I think this movie does have like really good like editing, and like it efficiently, I don't know, is well made to that point. Yeah. Where it's actually funny. I will say this is something that I didn't realize was stupid until last year. 8th grade graduation, is that a thing? Did you graduate from 8th grade?
I did, yeah, and I have very funny like pictures from it.
Yeah, I did not, because I did not realize that was a thing until this movie, apparently. I mean, when I left 8th grade, I just, like, got on the bus. Like, yeah. I went home. Yeah, no, I graduated, like, in 5th grade, I had a party.
My school district is, like, very big.
Mm.
So it's kind of, like, a big deal to go up to the high school.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess I see the appeal of it, but, like, I didn't realize that it was, like, a prominent thing to happen in, like, certain places, like, in America. Like, I didn't realize that, like, graduating 8th grade was, like, a huge accomplishment, because, like I said, like, when I left 8th grade, I just got on my school bus and I went home for the summer, and then I started high school, you know? Like, I think it's funny that the entire, like, emotional arc of this movie, it has the finale at an 8th grade graduation.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like a funny setting for it to me, and like also like the fact that this movie does have a big speech about love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at an 8th grade graduation, like in front of children.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's funny to me, because it's like the most like it's a very random place to have like that happen at.
It's also like if it's done well, I don't hate it, but like the trope of like a kid giving a speech at a school, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't, especially because it ends with him like confessing his love for the babysitter again. Like it's just kind of like, because the thing is like. The Steve Carell bit of it is like genuinely very sweet. It's just kind of like awkwardly placed like at that exact moment. Like I don't really understand, like there's two big things about this movie that I don't understand: the whole babysitter subplot in general, like that entire thing, and the decision to keep the to have the big finale, like, you know, love speech happen in 8th grade graduation. Because I just don't think it, like...
And, like, everybody is there. Like, literally everybody. Even the babysitter shows up to this 8th grade graduation.
Like, I think it would be, like... I mean, why wouldn't you do it at, like... You can even just do it, like, in the school parking lot again. I think that would be a great way to tie it back to the first fight they have in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. or have it like they go out to dinner after the graduation and have it happen there or something, like something else. Like, it's just, I don't like, like, I think the speech itself is good. It's just like, it's just the setting of it. I just think it doesn't completely nail it by that point. But, you know, his speech though about like, you know, their first date and I forgot that line, but where he was like, he's like, I loved you even when I hated you. It's like, it's like, there's just, it hurts because it's a good scene. It's just in the wrong place. Like, it's awkwardly placed into the movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's, yeah, this is one of those weird ones where I think it's a great movie. It just has a little hiccups here and there.
Yeah.
But I mean, as far as like a 2011 comedy goes, I mean, God, you could do a hell of a lot worse. Like, there's so many examples of like movies I liked that were comedies in like 2010, 2011 that just do not hold up at all. Yeah. And luckily, I would say like 80-ish% of this movie does hold up really well. And I still think, even though I don't like some elements of it, I will continue to rewatch it.
Yeah.
For comfort food. But I do have to acknowledge now that I've finally done it for the pod. I can finally go back to doing the like skipping through the babysitter sections. I can just go back to approximately watching 80 minutes of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is maybe the perfect cut of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, to me, my cut of this movie is there's no babysitter. She's not even in the movie. Nothing against their performance. It's just the character, the babysitter, whatever.
Yeah.
And to me, the movie ends. They just step outside the event. The kid goes to talk to his other friends. And then they have the heart-to-heart. And that's it. That's the ending. That's how it ends.
Yeah.
I'm just like workshopping it, I guess.
I think that I think I could fix her.
What, the babysitter?
Her and also the movie.
Yeah. Well, again, though, like I said, that's the weird thing about this movie is that, like, it's so there for, like, so often, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like it's the other parts of it are so good that you can just, like, completely, like, look past it. Almost. Mm-hmm. Almost. Yeah. Like, it's so close. I completely forgot that this movie ends with Blood by the Middle East. That cut to credits is like, every time I hear it, I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah. Like,
2011 was truly a wild time. Where studio movies could just like end like that.
Yeah.
Such a movie. It really is. It, in the very traditional sense of the word, this is such a movie. And you know what?
They don't make them like this anymore.
They don't. They really, truly don't. Are we getting another rom-com? Like, when is that going to happen? Other than Aubrey Plaza's potential movie.
Listen, that's got to happen.
It's got to at this point. Yeah, I mean, there's just, like, nothing in the docket, I don't feel like. Other than, like, I mean, we've talked about it ad nauseum on the pod. But, like, other than, like, streaming bullshit, like, what else do we have? Like, do we have anything in the theatrical docket?
Nope.
Like,
I'm not even going to fact check that, but nope.
Yeah. Like, I'm looking at a Letterboxd right now, upcoming. Oh my god, I know you didn't see the movie, but I forgot that Priyanka Chopra rom-com that just came out like a week ago. Mm-hmm. And it made like 1 million at the box.
Wait, that was in theaters? The one with Celine Dion? Oh my god.
Yeah. Yeah, it made exactly $1 million opening weekend. I guess for exactly the reason you just described, the fact that no one knew it went to theaters. Damn. Yeah, there's literally nothing. I mean, technically you count Magic Mike's Last Dance, I guess, if you want to, but I think it's really sad because did you see Rye Lane? I forgot.
Yes, I loved it.
It was great.
Thank you for that recommendation.
Yeah, it's a great movie, and I think that movie would have played really well in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, we're in the desert, and we're not getting any of this stuff. The only hope we have is the Jennifer Lawrence movie this summer. That's the only
hope
we have, which is not even really a rom-com, just kind of a studio comedy. But, all right, I think we've talked about this one enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you also just look at the timer and saw that we hit the exact 1 hour mark?
No, it doesn't show the timer on my end.
It shows it on my end.
Oh, did
it's
it?
Very funny timing.
Oh, did it?
That, like, the second you were like, well.
Yeah, I didn't realize that.
Hit 1 hour.
No, it only shows the amount of time we've been talking, so I have to, like, it only shows me, like, the total. So it never shows me, like, how long you've been recording it.
The recording, yeah.
Yeah. that's really funny, though. Well, no, actually, yeah, that was completely deliberate because I'm a great producer of the pod.
Yeah, you're very on top of things.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, this was a different kind of Zillennial movie. I think very cuspy, like I said. But I think it stands by in the canon. Like, I'm glad we talked about it because I don't know. I think it holds its place, especially for us Tumblr users. We remember. We were all there.
Yeah, we saw those gift sets.
Yeah, we got it for Christmas in 2011 like everybody else, you know? Like, we got it.
We took it out of Redbox like everybody else.
Yep. And also, as far as that Ryan Gosling too old to play Ken discourse, shut the fuck up. Know a good
you
man.
Tell him.
Know a good man when he's on screen, okay?
Yeah.
We only have so many more years of him doing this. Like, being shirtless in movies. We need to appreciate it when we have it, okay? I'm so tired of uneducated swines trying to tell me he's too old.
He could do this until he's, like, 80. Like,
exactly. Yeah, did you see that, like, the Cannes reporter saying that, like, Harrison Ford was still hot, and he was, like, flustered by it? He's like,
he literally is, like...
No, I mean, yeah, he's like, it's like, okay.
I know, I'm arguing against nobody.
Yeah, I mean, no one's arguing. I think, listen, I think the, like, deep fake Indiana Jones is, like, not great, but, like, if I saw him at a bar, I'd be like, hey, you know?
Yeah, obviously.
Deep fake Indiana Jones walks into a bar, WYD.
And we've only seen, like, a 2-second clip of him, so.
Honey, I want to see trailer. I want to see more.
I want to see a 5-minute clip of him.
Yeah. Let's put D.H. Harrison Ford in a rom-com with, I don't know, like, someone, like, of today, like, a leading lady from today, but with, like, D.H. Harrison Ford.
Me.
Yeah, put it with Kira. I can't even call it him.
That's the only thing I would ever ask AI to do, is to, like, put me as, like, a lady in the Indiana Jones.
When Anthony Russo said that recently, where he was like, you can, our TVs will have AI built into it where you can narrate a story with you and Marilyn Monroe. Kira
like,
heard
okay,
that.
Buddy, relax.
Kira heard that and was like, me and Harrison Ford? I say less.
Listen, buddy, we all know that you want to fuck Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I like how specific.
No, the best is like 2 days later, he made like an anti-AI comment. Everyone was like, the ghost of Marilyn Monroe like visited him in his sleep and like threatened his life.
And then he saw Blonde and he was like, never mind. he was like, nah, I can't.
He's like, damn, this movie's really shitty. It must be very true. I don't want anything to do with Marilyn Monroe ever.
We cannot exploit this woman any longer.
Yeah.
Comrade Russo. All right. Well, AI talk aside, before the robots kill us, I guess you can find me on Twitter, not promoting AI, but I will be promoting FastX. And I don't know, is there anything else coming out? I'll be on my Spider-Verse bullshit for the next week for sure. Definitely gonna be high on that. I mean, it's really that, Fast X and Mission and Barbie, I guess, you know, otherwise smooth sailing. It's smooth sailing to Dune Part 2, baby. We're back. We're so back. But yeah, you can find me on Twitter. I
haven't even seen the first one.
You gotta Dune the worm. You know, you gotta get on the Dune worm and ride the sand wave all the way to Dune Town. I don't know what I'm saying. Dune Town. Sounds like Toontown. Toontown's like closed, right?
In Disney World, it is. In Disneyland, it's open. It just reopened.
No, girl. I'm talking about the online game.
Oh, sorry. I'm like, yeah, it was there like a week and a half ago. I think Toontown's gone. I think the thing with Toontown is like, maybe it was a different website. Maybe it was like Magic Kingdoms online or something, but like fans like rebuilt the website, like the coding of it.
It is. Yeah, I just Google it. It's called Toontown Rewritten.
Yeah. We should
get on that. They closed the official one in 2013, which is honestly later than I thought it would be. I remember Virtual Magic Kingdom closed in like 2009 or something. I remember being devastated about that. So I guess where you can find me is Toontown Rewritten and on Twitter at Adam_NotSandler, where I'm gonna, did you ever play that game? I'll throw a pie at your face. Splash you with a, did you ever play that game? Like you could buy pies to throw at people. You could, you had those like little,
on Toontown?
Yeah. And you had like the flower on your chest that would like squirt water.
I don't think I ever really figured out Toontown.
It's I was never like high on it. I was like a
Club Penguin kid.
Yeah. Club Penguin, Habbo Hotel, and Virtual Magic. Pop Tropica and Roblox were definitely all up there. Yeah. All right. Okay, Patreon subscribers, send us $5 and we'll do the next episode on Roblox.
Yeah.
We'll do an album and talk about next week's movie.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Garlic Emoji. You can follow us on Twitter at Zillennial Canon, on Instagram at The Zillennial Canon. Give us some ratings, some reviews, and play Toontown online.
I'm thinking about that meme where it was like this kid on Roblox, and he said, I just found this game called the Better Call Saul Quiz, and it's just the same question over and over, and it's a picture of Saul Goodman deep fried, and it says, who is this Saul Goodman? Who is this Saul Goodman? I don't know why I just started thinking about that, and it started making me laugh so hard. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Saul Goodman.
Saul Goodman. Ha ha ha.